Hello, and welcome to the Imposter Syndrome Network podcast, where everyone belongs, especially if you think you don't. My name is Chris Grundemann, and I'm here with my absolutely amazing co-host, Zoe Rose.
Hello.
This is the Sebastian Paul Avarvari episode, and I think you're going to love it. Sebastian is a security leader with over 20 years of experience in IT and is interested in all things security, security governance, and AppSec. Hi, Sebastian. Would you like to introduce yourself a little bit further to the Imposter Syndrome Network?
Hi, nice being here. And yeah, it's been quite an entry for me in information security. I wouldn't actually even know where to start. There was kind of a gradual slip in from IT into security. Even how I end up in IT is a bit of a string of coincidences, ending up with me moving when I was just 14 to a different city because that's where I could find the only high school that was teaching computer science. Yeah, and over time, keep doing one thing or the other. First, I started in software development. Then I started to look at, how could I create this Java client for this application? Why is this repeatable string with the password coming through when I'm trying to understand the communication protocol? And I wonder how can that be misused? And later, at another company, was overworking. Kept asking the security team every day 10,000 questions until they said, well, how about we make it official and just join our team for formally? And been working both on the consulting side and the internal companies. Had a chance to see a lot of companies from the consulting perspective and also internally, which makes it easy when you tell stories because it's hard for people to place in which of the companies did that actually happen. So that definitely helps with the talks and podcasts. Yeah, currently I'm working as a security manager for Canon EMEA. Yeah, I have a really amazing team that helps me to shine. And it's something that I never thought that I will end up doing when I started my career. It's always going to be technical. I'm always going to be a techie. Even 10 years ago, if you would have asked me, I want to keep to the technical side. But nowadays, I take so much joy from managing a team. And yeah, it has its headaches and there are ups and downs. But I never in a million year would I have expected it to be as fun as it is and that I would take so much energy from it.
That's awesome. Well, we'll definitely dive into a lot of that there. There's quite a few things to unpack. And I think especially that idea of kind of, I think for a lot of us who start out as individual contributors that jump into management, sometimes it's disastrous, always is terrifying. It's really cool to hear that it's been so awesome for you. Knowing that, and then you say that you work for security Canon in EMEA, and that sounds eerily familiar to what Zoe does. So I'm just going to put you on the spot right away here and ask you what it's like to work with Zoe. Don't worry, she's not listening.
Okay, so let's mute her and her speakers. No, it's really great. And it's one, and I'm absolutely serious about it. It's one of the people in my team that really makes us shine. And that's the thing. A security team is the people. And of course, it does help that we have somebody in the team that brings a lot of cool stickers. And she's a very well-known person in the industry and brings all kind of new information. Yeah, it's absolutely lovely working with her.
Awesome. I have found the same thing to be true, although we have a much easier job together just interviewing amazing people. So,
I didn't say it's easy.
Ah.
However, I would like to highlight from your career, you even told us at one point you annoyed people into just making you part of their team. So I feel like both of us have that skill set.
I think it's kind of prerequisite, right?
Fair enough. Well, one point that Chris mentioned during your introduction is you're interested in all the things security, security governance, and AppSec. What do you define as all the things security?
If you look nowadays, security has so many components. There is no single path into security. There is no, and also there is no chance to say I'm going to master all the domains in security. And you have to test a little bit of everything so you have a good understanding of the big picture. And this is where it helped me to have different roles in different companies and even working in internal audit at some point doing security audits. And by the way, if you want to learn how to write reports, talk with your internal audit team. It's an advice I always give. But yeah, all things security, everything from even physical security, log picking, and understanding those principles to understanding what makes an application secure. How do you secure a networks? Understanding the various security governance frameworks. Everything contributes and everything helps. And one thing that I was doing in one of the previous roles to get more buy-in into security from other managers, we would be having this management events, have a nice lunch together, and I would just always carry with me the bag with the lockpicks and a few easy sample locks, and I can teach you in 3 minutes to pick this lock. It's amazing how many conversations I was opening about security with those people after they realized, right, I'm a financial director, I'm the CFO, and I can pick this lock. That means, okay, so it's a skill that everybody can learn. It's not something magical, and that just rolls off. And so finding all those details and all those things that you can use as discussion openers about security, that's a good skill to have.
We just interviewed Dave Kennedy, and that was the point I made to him. We didn't put in the recording, but my comment of how much I used the social engineering toolkit, because he created that, and how I use that to start those conversations, because it's so bloody easy, and it's demystifying that security isn't this mystic, you know, unicorn thing. It's actually quite easy, or, well, let's say it's not easy, but it's easy to get around sometimes, because it's usually not done properly.
Yeah, there's a method to the job progression. No, but seriously, that's a point that I also made when I gave the talk on the 7 habits of effective security leaders. Actually, the main title was Security is Here to Help. It's a security conference, so the audience was mainly technical people. And I was explaining the management skills, the leadership skills. This is something that you can learn just as a financial manager, to keep using the financial guys, just as a financial manager looks at you and sees you hacking into something and think, well, that's magic. He must have been born with a different brain to do that. No, you learned it. You went through trainings and you tried things and you went through a certain path. The same thing is with leadership and management. So people shouldn't be afraid to make that jump, but also shouldn't just expect that, oh, it just happens. It takes some work and you will fail in some areas. You will learn, gain some experience. There are mentors and coaches and trainings that you can follow. There are all kind of frameworks, just as you have 10,000 security frameworks. You can find 10,000 books on various management methods and frameworks. It's a very structured domain that you can follow.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, and that's what's interesting to me too, is, you know, it sounds like this parallels your journey, which is kind of within technology. I think at least one of the things that attracted me to it, and I feel like a lot of other people are attracted to technology because of a mind that thinks logically, kind of rationally, and very much like stepwise, and this, you know, kind of engineer's level of discovery. And then, you know, we talk about soft skills a lot. And I think one of the reasons there's a gulf there is because we are, you know, changing the way we think a little bit. But to your point, right, the management, you know, management actually has been studied quite well. And if you're willing to apply that same kind of analytical process that you did to learning about how servers work or how firewalls work or how networks work, if you apply that to how people and businesses and organizations work, you probably can find some success.
Yeah, absolutely. And it applies to everything in security. There are so many wheels that we keep trying to reinvent where we could just use something that might already exist in the business. I mean, security, especially in the enterprise world, security is a lot about processes. And there are so many tools for process maturity, for process improvement that we just don't use because we think that somehow, just because it's a security process, it's different than any other process in the world. No, it's just another business process. And we can reuse so much and we can get so much benefit and we can be so much more effective in security by using. And also it brings the fact that you're using frameworks and tools that are familiar to your business counterparts. You start talking the same kind of language and it helps them to understand you better. And it helps you to understand the business side better. Because another thing that I keep emphasizing in the various talks I've been giving is that security is not a goal in itself. And sometimes we tend to forget that. Security is not about security. Security is about protecting the business or protecting the organization that you're part of, protecting the people around you. It is not a goal in itself.
So one thing that I was interested in touching on with you is, obviously, you're my manager, so we work together. But one thing I really like about the way you approach your management style is you change how you manage based on the person, but also based on the situation. And one thing that you shared with me was this situational leadership, I think is what it was called. I can picture the graph at the moment, but I'm very bad with names. And one thing I appreciated about that is how you can apply how you're managing somebody, the style you're managing, being more supportive or more hands-off based on the situation, obviously situation awareness. And how do you, as a manager, how do you get to the point where you understand how to do that effectively? Because I think in security specifically, we struggle a little bit with the people stuff and we struggle a little bit with the relationships and we struggle a little bit with handling the right amount of leadership or the right type of leadership, I suppose.
Well, let me tell you a secret. Everybody struggles. It's not just a security problem. It seems maybe a bit more for us, but it's not. It's really a skill that needs to be learned. The framework that you're referring to, that's Blanchard's situational leadership tool. And it's indeed a very powerful tool, and it helps you to recognize at what level a certain person is in a certain skill, because the same person might be very developed and very self-sufficient in one area and need a bit more coaching or a very directive style in a different area. And learning how to recognize those styles and learning which kind of communication tools, what kind of language works for somebody in each of those situations. And going through the method, but also applying it and testing it, seeing how it works, because there's always, of course, a difference between what you learn from the book and when you start applying, especially when you work with people. But there are steps that can be taken. And this works very well in cooperation with communication styles and learning a little bit about conflict management. Because again, conflict is not just something magical. Nobody knows how to handle conflict by default. And you know, we do security. We are no strangers to conflict, especially since we so often are the bearer of bad news. And we tell people that their children is ugly, which nobody likes to hear. And how do we say that? How do we, by the way, it doesn't apply to your daughter, Zoe. But how do we communicate that? How do we recognize communication styles? How do we recognize the communication styles that others are using with us so we can be effective in our reply and make sure that the message we're trying to get across is the right one? Because we also have a big gap between what we're saying and what is being perceived on the other side. And again, it's nothing magical. It's, some people might have a few more native skills for it, but it's, everybody at the end of the day learns it one way or another. And there are plenty of tools that we can use.
Yeah, not to dive too deep into kind of one facet of what you just said, but one of the things you mentioned at the tail end of that I think is really interesting to me personally is that idea that, you know, communication is participatory. And so, you know, if you just say, oh, I said that, like I sent that email, your job isn't done yet, right? I think it was George Bernard Shaw who said something along the line, I'm going to screw up the quote, but something along the lines of, words are simply postage stamps that the receiver must unwrap to receive the message. Something along that. And I really like that, you know, what you're responsible for, if you're trying to communicate, is what the other person hears, not what you're saying. And that also goes back to kind of Postel's law and the idea that, you know, communication is robust when you're liberal in what you receive and conservative in what you send. And it's all about this, just kind of taking that responsibility that what I actually want out of this situation is for that person to do the thing or know the thing or whatever it is. And so you've got to tailor your communication so that it works for them, not necessarily that you feel like you've done your job, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm going to link to Stephen Covey's 7 Habits. And one of the habits is search first to understand and then to be understood. And this applies to communication as well. Because you cannot appreciate how your message is going to be perceived on the other side if you do not have some understanding of the recipient. And the more you do to understand that person, to understand their challenges, what kind of issues are they facing? If you don't do that, then the message might read to them very differently from the one that you intended to say. And that's a lesson that I've learned multiple times in sometimes very painful ways. And then I had the luck of having some people who pointed out, look, take a step back, talk with that person and check what was their understanding of that message. What did they actually find in that package that they were unwrapping on which you applied the stamp? And seeing how different it is. We think that the difference is in perception of the messages, you know, something minor or maybe some details. No, people can fundamentally misread our messages, and not just our messages, our nonverbal communication, because, you know, even though we work remotely so much and written and voice is the main communication, we still see each other from time to time. And learning a little bit from those communication cues, how to interpret the nonverbal cues from the other, and recognizing how much of the communication in normal human interaction is nonverbal, that's also very important.
So one thing that I wanted to talk on is your kind of very diverse background. So we both live and work in the Netherlands, but you're not from the Netherlands. You've also worked in quite a few different countries and different continents, maybe not physically, but I know you worked for companies based in the US as well. So I'm curious in your perspective about dealing with and working with different cultures, as well as you're currently working in your not native language. And so I suspect that kind of parallels that conversation we just had about miscommunication. And it's probably, I'm unskilled, so I don't have multiple language backgrounds. I barely speak English, but I do find it extremely impressive that most of my coworkers, including you, can speak in their non-native language and do a really good job of it. So I'm curious on your kind of experience in that kind of environment.
Also, language-wise, I was in a way lucky that early on I started working in English, and in IT, a lot of the information is in English, so it kind of pushes you in that direction. But the language itself is just the first and maybe a small part of the equation. There are indeed big differences between cultures, and there are big differences between business cultures. I'm looking at Europe and United States, to take a very simple one, or Europe and Japan. You have to make a bit of an effort to understand the differences, to understand the work culture, to understand what certain things mean in different cultures. Even within Europe, we're both working with different countries, and we see very different styles. You have the very direct Dutch approach, and you have the more taking the time and being a bit more indirect and trying to preserve the relation that you have in the southern cultures. And there are, again, there are trainings and methods there. A couple of years ago, we got a very, very beautiful training from somebody who was specialized in cultural differences. And they were explaining how even things like the perception of time is very different in different cultures, and not just, oh, some people tend to be late. No, more fundamentally about the timeline between making a decision to do something and completing that action. How do you do the follow up to the action? That perception of time, and it's not even linear for all the cultures. It's very enlightening, and what certain words mean, and even in English, where, you know, you say, yeah, but everybody uses English as the business language. Yes, but certain words can be problematic in different languages, and you cannot pay attention each and every time. And when we speak, sometimes we just go on automatic pilot, and we it's easy to make mistakes. But making at least the effort makes a difference, and looking for that knowledge. And yeah, I'm asking, if you're in a company, just asking, is there a training about this? Is there some cultural appreciation or cultural differences trainings that I could make use of? I benefited a lot from that.
Has that been a challenge for you? Or maybe let me ask this a better way. What is the largest challenge that you've faced in your career so far?
Oh, myself. Myself, and especially early in the career, me and my big mouth. Speaking of communication skills, let me tell you a secret. I was never good at soft skills. As in, I was terrible. I've started and amplified a lot of conflict without even meaning to. Fortunately, I was able to learn from that. But yeah, that was one of the first obstacles that I needed to overcome, to get myself out of the way. And yeah, I come from a culture that has some strong influences from Southern Europe in terms of being very outspoken and vocal, and you just say what you mean and use your hand a lot. And yeah, Romanians do that as well. And we're very passionate about what you're doing. And I am passionate about what I'm doing as well. And I love IT and I love security. But we have to be careful that that passion is very easy to translate into we don't care about the others, we just care about ourselves. There's a fine line there that we need to really be careful with. Because yeah, otherwise you end up like me having to explain to quite a few managers, why did you say that again?
One quote that I really like that I saw from, I think it was Def Camp, I think it was their website. It was your quote, but I stole it from their page, was, opinions are my own and I'm not afraid to change them. For me, I read that as, I'm very opinionated, but I will listen. That's kind of how I see you kind of present yourself as a manager in our team is, you're very outspoken, yes, but when I give you feedback and say, this is how I read this, I know you'll listen to me. When did that quote come about? Was it a mistake that happened or was it trying to express yourself differently?
Oh, if it would have been just one mistake. But seriously, yeah, it's something that I've learned, part of it from books. I mean, as I said, Covey has exactly some learnings about that, about getting yourself out of the way and trying to listen first before you want to be understood by others. And understanding that your opinions are still based on a limited set of facts. And quite often, we do not have all the facts. Or our interpretation of the facts might be slightly different from different perspectives. That's why it's important to speak with people, to understand where do they come from. And really getting ourselves out of the way and understanding that we do not lose anything by changing our mind. It's not something that defines us. Our ability to change our minds when presented with new facts, that's something that can define us, and that's a very good quality to have.
One other point that I wanted to ask about was, we're both managers, but I feel like, well, you're my manager, so therefore you automatically are more senior. But I do feel like I notice a difference between our capabilities, which I would hope you're my manager. But one question I had is getting into that much more senior position, and kind of, what advice would you give yourself if you were starting again from either a junior position or maybe you're mid-level management and you're looking to go up higher? What kind of advice would you give yourself?
So I would say find a mentor. I didn't have that early on, and that's something I wish I had. Try to learn. Try to read some books, but also try to avoid falling into the trap of reading 10,000 books and not applying one. Find something that resonates with you. Find a method that you feel that you can work with and apply it. That's something that I also see with some people. That it's easy to read a lot, but making that step, I'm going to change something. I'm going to start applying something. That's a very difficult one. And it happened to me early on. I was reading things and I was having this misconception. Just because I read them, that means that they will automatically start to apply in practice. No. You have to make conscious effort. It has to be an intentional change that you start applying those things. Only then change will happen. And by the way, I'm not your senior. I just happen to be in a different role in the organization. This is another important skill. And it's another aspect of getting yourself out of the way as you move into management and leadership. Really accepting that you do not know everything, and accepting that you will have people in the team that are smarter than you, as you are, for example, and learning how to let them do their work, how to make you shine, and putting them on the spotlight when it needs to be, shielding them when they need to be shielded, and working with them. The sooner you understand that everybody can bring something to the table, and just looking at what everybody brings to the table and how can you make a nice dinner out of it, that's a very important skill. And also look at, if you want to see when you're maybe ready to make a progression in leadership and management. And by the way, leadership and management are not the same thing. You can be a leader without being a manager. And there are many managers who are not leaders. And there's a story going on a sideline that leadership versus management is like walking through a jungle. As a manager, you make sure that everybody's well-vested, that the guys at the front have the best machetes, that they're sharpened and they're making good progress. And leadership is climbing on a tall tree and looking around and checking if you are in the right jungle. And you can start being a leader without having responsibilities. And you can take initiative. You can be proactive about things. And you will see how people react to that. Are you making the right choices? Do they stop and listen to me? This was my revelation that maybe I should start looking into leadership and management. I was in a technical role many years ago. We were working with this customer, and we keep having discussions that were going around in circles, and we were not making progress. And because I was not the senior in those meetings, I was just speaking when I was being asked. At some point, I said, hey, guys, can we stop for a second? I'm not quite sure I understand what's the problem we're trying to solve here. Can we break it down a little bit? And all right, so it's that, but can we dig into that a little bit more? And all right, so how about you try this and you try this, and how about we take this approach? And it was absolutely not my place to make those comments, but I saw people listening, and I saw things changing, and I saw the logjam getting unstuck. So, right, that's interesting. And I'm getting a really good feeling from this. I'm making change happen without applying even the technical skills. I'm not developing anything here. And yet the client is happy. We're moving forward. What is this? And that can be a moment where, paying a bit of attention around you can help you to move forward.
Awesome. This has been a really fun conversation. Unfortunately, we are about out of time for today. Sebastian, thank you so much for sharing your story with the Imposter Syndrome Network. And thank you to all of our listeners for your attention and your support. We do have a LinkedIn group for the Imposter Syndrome Network that we'd love for you to join and get or give career advice, mentorship, or just general community support. Before we close out, Sebastian, I am curious, with a fairly long and illustrious career, I think you're in a really good position, and you've definitely picked up a lot of insight and personal growth along the way and have become a great leader. At this point, do you ever feel like you're not smart enough?
Oh, every day. Absolutely every day. But I compensate that by having a really great team. Really, it helps. And by seeing that, right, I might not be smart enough now, but there are things I can learn. I can still pick up a book and learn things. That helps a lot.
Yeah. So that seems like that's kind of your response to imposter syndrome, or whatever we want to call it, is just reminding yourself, I can learn, I can get better, and maybe even going and doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And basically saying, I'm not good enough yet.
I like that a lot. The yet makes a big, big difference.
Absolutely.
Do you have any projects that the Imposter Network should know about? Anything going on? Talks upcoming or something like that?
Oh, unfortunately, at the moment, I don't have that much time for side projects. I do help occasionally with Coder Dojo, teaching some basic coding skills to kids together with my son. I'm working now on the Christmas Village, which has been been delayed this year, but it's usually quite the project. And I do try to do things outside IT. I like gardening. Zoe has seen more than enough of my garden pictures and flowers and everything. And I also do running, and it helps having those disconnect moments. And maybe that would be a good advice as well. As passionate as we are about IT and security, stopping and literally smelling the roses from time to time, finding something that allows us to disconnect a little bit can actually be very beneficial. A lot of my ideas, the talk that I gave recently in a dev camp, came to me while I was running and just focusing on what's in front of me and just what's in my head.
Yeah, it's amazing how powerful the subconscious can be if you let it do its thing. Do you have a presence on social media, or if folks wanted to reach out and get in touch with you, talk more, are you open to that? And where can people find you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn. Just Google my name, Sebastian Avarvari. I'm also on Twitter at Sebastian_Paul. I do chat a lot about many things, politics from time to time, so be warned. And I do have some strong opinions on many topics. But I do follow a lot of the InfoSec community, even though it's now it's shrinking a little bit on Twitter. I might need to do what I was planning actually long before Elon to open also a Mastodon account. That's something to look into.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's going on here. Well, awesome. We'll post those links in the show notes so folks can find you if they want. And we will be back next week.
He's one of the crazy people that runs marathons, I'm just going to say.
Yeah, and marathons are absolutely about mental much more than the physical. I mean, but last time when I did a marathon was, I think my legs gave up about 30 kilometers in completely. The rest of it was just the mind.
Yeah, just pushing through.
Yeah, which is a nice way of saying I'm damn stubborn.
Exactly.